Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens. My co-host is Pat Foreman, author of City Chicks, Chicken Tractor, and other great titles. Today is Tuesday, September 25th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and, of course, living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry, from rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams. Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com. Treats for Chickens. Health and happiness for your modern backyard pet chicken. Healthy pet chicken basics. Non-toxic bug relief. Treats. Organic snacks and more. All created with your backyard pet chickens in mind. At Treats for Chickens, we treat your chickens well. Find us online at treatsforchickens.com or ask for us in your local farm and feed store or favorite pet shop. That's treatsforchickens.com. Snap Lock Chicken Coops, the American-made, maintenance-free, plastic hen house. With its double-wall construction and adjustable ventilation, it's the perfect year-round home for your small flock. It will not fade or rot and is unaffected by rain, sun, heat, cold, or chemicals. The removable litter and nesting trays make cleaning a breeze. Every access point is lockable for maximum predator resistance. Snap Lock chicken coops weigh just 40 pounds and snap together in minutes. So spend more time enjoying your flock and less time building and maintaining your coop. For additional information, please visit snaplockchickencoops.com. Also available at mypetchicken.com, critter-cages.com, and chickensforbackyards.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry. with the Chicken Whisperer. It is marvelous, not Monday anymore, but marvelous Tuesday. It's a great day. Wow. Woke up this morning and, man, it was nippy outside. It was quite cool. Had to, in the middle of the night, kind of pull up the comforter a little bit. It got kind of chilly here in South Georgia. It was probably high 40s or definitely the low 50s, 50, 51, 49. And then earlier this morning, I'm not sure what time it was, 7:30 or 8 o'clock, I heard Jen in the other room kind of trying to turn on for the first time of the season the little propane heater we have over here. We love these things. They are very efficient. They heat up the room real, real quick in this old, old house. And I heard click, 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 and I thought to myself, I know that she has not turned the valve on below because, you know, when it gets warm, we turn the valve off, you know. And so I walk in here and I'm like, you're going to be doing that a very long time. Without reaching underneath and turning the main valve on, so you actually have some gas to ignite. So so she had the heater on in here for her early morning training classes she had with her online school that she teaches. So we had to, well, she did. I probably would not have, but she turned the heater on in the living room this morning so far. So it was quite cool, but loving the weather. Got some stuff done around the homestead yesterday, and it was very nice midday. It wasn't anything where you were going to have to work up a sweat. I was working on the Jeep a little bit. Had an issue with a connector, and I thought it was the battery, but I just bought a battery about 3 months ago for it. So anyway, worked on the Jeep a little bit. Very, very pleasant yesterday here at the homestead. So loving this cool weather. So very good. Alrighty, so Poets was asking who Nathan Osmond is, who endorses the show. He is the nephew of Marie, Donnie and Marie Osmond. And yep, he is the Osmond clan. And he is a country singer. In fact, one of his show songs, I'm trying to think what it was, got all the way up to top five of the national country charts. He always stays really in the top five and top ten on the indie charts, the independent charts. But he's had a couple of hits in the last 6 months that have topped into the national top 40 of country music up there with the big boys and the big girls. So he is a hot up and comer. In fact, I don't know if it hit number one. It may have hit number one. It was in the top five. And I'm trying to think. I think it was called "Sweet" was the song. His first debut hit on his first album. He's got another one called "The Tailgating Song," I believe, that got up there maybe in the top 10 of the national charts. So just wanted to let you know and answer that question there in the chat room. We got a fabulous show for you today. It's the last Tuesday of the month, the fourth Tuesday, and we're going to welcome, as always, Christine Heinrich. She is a wonderful author of two great books, at least. There's How to Raise Chickens and How to Raise Poultry, endorsed by the FFA. And she is a historian with the Society for Preservation of Poultry Antiquities. And great show today. We're going to be talking about breeding for traditional values, such as disease resistance and long-lived productivity. So today we'll be discussing a little bit about breeding for traditional values, such as disease resistance and long-lived productivity. Now, she'll be sharing with us in an email. She said she talked to a breeder just recently that has a 10-year-old hen that's still producing eggs as if it was much, much younger, as it was in its, say, teen years, if we will. So we'll talk to her all about that, what his secrets are, if it does have to do with breeding, and why. My question when I read that, and we'll ask Christine this, if the big issue about the big corporate farms is that, you know, after a couple of years, because they've just been it's just craziness, you know. Not going to go down that road right now because it's not the topic. But after 2 years, they consider the hen a spent hen, and then they basically cull them, get rid of them, what have you. In fact, we reported on an article about a year ago where McDonald's and Wendy's and all these other places didn't even want these spent hens because of the quality of the meat at that point. But guess who was using them and taking them and making it in the food? Yep, school systems. So our kids are being fed a lot of these spent hens that McDonald's and Wendy's wouldn't even take. Let's see if I can find that article. So the other issue is with that. So my question was, I wonder if with this because I know that they breed a lot of things. When we talked, and I talked specifically and sat right next to the developer of the Isa Brown over from Belgium, scientist. It was amazing. One of the highlights of my career so far. Really enjoyed that because I love that breed. You know, they develop a cool and calmness and temperament into the breeds because they're designing birds for, again, these commercial farms. So if they're breeding in cool, calm, and collected, how can we breed so they'll lay? You would think that a chicken that would lay longer than just 2 years would be more cost effective for the commercial folks that use them. So we'll talk a little bit about that with Christine as well today. So we do have a great show. Tomorrow, I tried to get, we're trying to work schedules. I've invited him on a couple of times, and he wasn't available tomorrow. We were going to have another show all about bees, how to get started, honeybees, the equipment that's needed, getting started, classes, all kinds of things. And we will eventually hit on all four cylinders. All six cylinders or all eight cylinders, depending on what vehicle you have, very soon. And so the last two times I've invited him on, it's going to be a great show. He has not been available. So tomorrow is still up in the air, but I'll be working on maybe a small business for our Wednesday. This Thursday, we've got Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine, that's going to be joining us this Thursday. And it's going to be a great topic. Let me see if I can find the topic here. I may have deleted it. Nope, here it is. This coming Thursday, looks like we've got, freezing produce for storage. Freezing produce for storage. All that stuff that comes out of the garden. Freezing that appropriately. So you can get some longevity out of that. So that'll be this Thursday. And then another fun Friday this week where we have lots of prizes to give away. So great shows continuing on this week, and today is no exception. I'm going to share with you some exciting news. Actually, I have two things of exciting news. All of our longtime and regular listeners know that a couple of Saturdays ago, I was invited up to ride on a float in a parade with the Cobb County Backyard Chicken Alliance. And long story short, in Cobb County, you have to have 2 acres to have one chicken, but you could have 15 dogs on an eighth of an acre if you wanted to, or 15 cats. It's just, it's one of those things. We're all familiar with it in some of these ordinances across the country. But I got note this morning that Joseph Pond, who's kind of running that group and who goes to all these meetings and tries to educate and get all this out in the public, again with signing up for the parade and the whole nine yards, he got news today. He's already had one. He does have one of the county commissioners on board to try to revisit the ordinance, maybe rewrite a new one and have it, proposed and bring up to vote to be much more relaxed regarding backyard poultry. But you have to have two of the county commissioners that would be on board for any change to be done. Well, Joseph this morning heard from the local newspaper that another county commissioner is now on board. So this is exciting news for Cobb County. Joseph has done a fabulous job and getting the word out, attending the meetings, educating the public and the commissioners. The parade was awesome. But so that was good news. He actually got news from local paper that a second county commissioner is on board now, and doesn't mean anything's going to happen except for the fact that now that we have two, it can be presented and they can get a team or a task force or whatever you want to call it to actually look at this, come up with some type of plan or action, maybe even a trial ordinance, and then go in January 2013, it'll come up and public will be able to speak. It will be brought up at the meetings, and then it will be the public can speak in favor or against. And then, of course, they vote on it. Now, it still has to pass all this, has to go through the voting process, but that's what they're looking. So congratulations, Joseph Pond up there in Cobb County, and for getting that second commissioner on board to try to get the ball rolling to change the ordinance up there. So congratulations to you. That is some good news. Also, I posted on the Facebook page this morning a very nice article from Somerville, Somerville News, which I believe is up there in New England, in the area of New England. And the title of the article, the news article, was Somerville Becomes First City in the Commonwealth to Unveil Agricultural Ordinance. Somerville Becomes First City in the Commonwealth to Unveil Agricultural Ordinance. Okay. State's premier urban agriculture ordinance includes regulations for farming on city and private land, keeping of chickens and bees. Mayor Joseph A. Curtatone announced that, following approvals by the city's Board of Aldermen August 16th, Planning Board August 16th, and Board of Health September 20th, Somerville is now the first city in Massachusetts to pass an urban agricultural ordinance that establishes formal guidelines for urban farming and gardening, the keeping of chickens and bees, and other policies governing the growth and sale of agricultural products in an urban setting. Residents, nonprofit agencies, or businesses seeking to obtain permits to begin farming or keeping bees or chickens could visit or should visit the city's urban agricultural website, www.somervillema.gov, and then /urban-ag, A-G. Okay, that's it, www.somervillema.gov/urban-ag, all one word, U-R-B-A-N-A-G. Information on the initiative and upcoming events can also be found on the Urban Agricultural blog. We are committed to making our city a great place to live, work, play, and raise a family. And we believe that ought to include a commitment to promoting a healthy and sustainable community by increasing access to fresh, healthy, local foods and reconnecting residents with their food sources, said Mayor Curatone. Somerville worked hard to become a model of innovation in such areas as government transparency, data sharing, and performance-driven management. Through programs like Shape Up Somerville, we've also maintained a focus on promoting healthier lifestyles and better health outcomes for our residents, and especially our children. The passage of an urban agricultural ordinance once again demonstrates how, as a community, we continue to embrace innovation and emerging best practices while working in close collaboration with great local partners like Groundwork Somerville and Green City Growers who have spearheaded this initiative. So I was thrilled to see this. Again, if you really want to cut the chase and get down to it, the Constitution allows us to keep bees and chickens and goats and just about anything else we want to on our own property. But over time, as these cities were developed, they've created ordinances and so on and so on and so on. And so the Constitution's kind of been set aside. But in this particular case, again, it's a start. And again, folks that to fall into that category of wanting to keep bees and chickens and living sustainable can now do so, in this city, Somerville. So congratulations, residents. Congratulations, town. And, of course, some people may think that they're just giving you permission to do what you can already do according to the Constitution. But, again, and that's true, but, again, the majority of people, aren't fitting into that. So they're still, hey, want to buy, law-abiding citizen, want to do this, want to do that, here are the rules, got to abide by the rules, I want to have a farm, want to have, the bees and the chickens on the property, yeah, the Constitution allows me to do that, but some people just don't want to fight that fight, and but they're happy now to be able to keep, at least in their mind, bees and gardens and everything else legally there in Somerville. So it was a good story, congratulations.
And good, good, good. All righty. Well, hey, let's see. It's got 12:20 Eastern, and it looks like Christine is on the line. So if you'll give me just a second, I'll get over to the switchboard. We'll bring her on. And while I'm doing that, I will head over here and say hello to everybody in the chat room. Thank you very much for joining us today. It is full. All the homeschoolers that listen to the show, all the over-the-road truck drivers, and, of course, all the retail feed and seed stores out there that stream this radio show live every day, Monday through Friday, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We thank you very much for streaming the show live. And Christmas Chick in the chat room is waving. Hello, how are you doing? Picklefish says he hears a crying child, and that's Caleb in the background. He's having a little bit of lunch. He's just being very vocal, but he is not crying. He's a happy camper today. We've had a good time this morning. And, in fact, I hear Jen saying, oh, better sit down. I don't know, what is it with toddlers wanting to stand up in their high chair? What is up with that? And he's already figured out how to get out of the straps that hold him in, so he's a pretty smart boy. Oh, me, gotta live it, gotta love it. So, all righty, and we've got Nancy in there, and, well, I don't know all about that. Nancy's saying, CW, you are famous. I said, I don't know if I'd go that far. I don't know what that's pertaining to. It's just kind of out of the blue there in the chat room. I'm trying to figure out what's going on above or what would cause Nancy to post that in the chat room. Maybe she saw me on Fox News or CNN or ABC or NBC. Maybe she read my book. Who knows? Maybe she saw me in the news article. Or who knows? I don't know if I'd go that far again, and I'm very frustrated now working with the TV producer. However, I will let everybody know regarding that, just a real quick update. I posted on the Facebook page, I guess it was a couple of days ago, and let's see. Oh, that's true, Poet's wife, very true. The issue there is this, kind of the last update. He is getting a little cranky now and there. I'm not sure why. Maybe Jen's not putting enough food in there. So, what was I going to say? Ah, yes, the TV show. I think the final word there was the producer that I was working with was going to produce the take the show idea to the bulk of producers that works for her company and see what's going to run with. So here's the last, out of all of the show topics that we discussed, out of all the, you know, ideas for episodes and things like that, for maybe doing a pilot and then pitching it to different networks and what network actually it was, then the final, I think, say was that they were going to try to pitch to the producers a show where CW, yours truly, with of course maybe a team of folks that specialize in different things, we would travel around the country. We would go to specifically cities that have had large companies close. Hang on just a second. Let me look at something. Large companies have shut down. They've gone out of business. Houses have been foreclosed on. Job rate is horrible, like up there in Detroit, Michigan, other places, small towns, big towns, the whole nine yards. And when we stop there, we'll set up community gardens and community chicken coops, not necessarily just there. We may go into back to private yards as well. So the last out of all the topics that we talked about, I think the one that she was going to run with was that one, where we again visit towns and cities that have had a hard time, and there's a lot of them. There's a lot of them. Foreclosure, business closings, unemployment, the whole nine yards. Set up wonderful community gardens. Of course, it would incorporate a chicken coop, maybe even finding some residents that would like chicken coops in their backyard and then getting those started. And so that's, at this point, the last I heard was that that was the show. And they were initially looking at a show that was going to be pitched maybe to the Discovery Network / Animal Planet. And then now it looks like it may actually, here comes my little man right now. Hey, little buddy. Hey, daddy loves you. Yeah, there's a daddy smile right there. But I think last it looked like they may be pitching it to, now I don't own a TV, and it's kind of like a, you either love it or you hate it, but they were talking about, hang on. All pitching it to the O Network. O Network, Oprah's Network, OWN, I don't know. So anyway, that was the last that I had heard, so I'll probably get an update here in the next 30 days regarding that, if it was a crash and burn or whatnot. But as I could discuss for 30 minutes, the whole ups and downs and the disappointment and the frustration dealing with these producers day in and day out for several years about a TV show regarding backyard poultry. So anyway, hey, let's get over here to the phone lines. We've got Christine Heinrich on hold, and we've got a great topic today, and we'll bring her live right now. Christine, thank you very much for joining us. I know you're on the road, but thanks for taking time out of your day.
Good morning, Annie. Yeah, it's great to be here. I'm actually in Las Vegas today. It's real different out here, I'll tell you. It's very hot out here in the desert. It's cooled off apparently a little bit down to about the low 90s. But it certainly is a lot hotter than I'm used to out on the coast.
So let me ask you this.
Sure.
Apparently, and I've never been to Vegas, but apparently there is a casino there, maybe two, that actually has a game, I guess you'd call it, where you can play tic-tac-toe against a chicken. Go ahead.
I don't know that there is. I haven't heard that, but I have seen that done. They used to have a little setup like that in Monterey, California, back in the 80s when my daughter was young, and people would complain that, you know, it was inhumane to the chicken. But, you know, all the chickens I ever saw there, and I did talk to the guy who owned it, he had several chickens who rotated through, and it was kind of a fun little thing, and she would just peck on the X or the O and play tic-tac-toe with you.
Yep, so I've seen that a couple of times. You know, if you can beat the chicken, you win $25,000 or what have you. And, you know, in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, let me see how this really works. What's the catch here? And I was thinking, okay, maybe you're really playing a computer, and what happens is the computer drops a little bit of feed in whatever square that it wants actually the chicken to peck on, and then actually the chicken will hit the feed, which then puts an X. So you're not really playing the chicken. You're playing a computer that drops feed where it wants the chicken to peck, and then so it's one of those kind of undercover things. But yeah, I just didn't know if you're – so Vegas, very cool. Are you the gambling kind?
No, I'm not. As a matter of fact, I'm just traveling this time with my husband, who is here for a conference for his business. He's an engineer. And, you know, Vegas hosts a lot of conferences. A lot of people like to come here. I'm not big on it myself, but it's been a nice visit for me. It's nice to get a break from home and to see some different surroundings and just kind of take a step back from my work and look over it and say, well, you know, how do things look now, and what is it that I need to proceed forward on?
Mm-hmm.
So I take it Kat is not there today. Is she? She must have been up at the Mother Earth News Fair last weekend.
She was. She joined us yesterday, and actually she was traveling back home, so she's probably overwhelmed. She's been on the road so much. She was out in California for the Heirloom Festival out there, the Heirloom Conference, and then, of course, she came back, and she had something near just outside of Washington, D.C., something she attended at Monticello, and then she went to the Mother Earth News Fair up in Pennsylvania, and she was on her way back, so she did join us en route yesterday coming back home. So I'm sure today she's either catching up on her rest, working in the pharmacy, or getting a lot of catch-up done there at her little homestead.
Yeah, it's always hard when you're out of the office. Things pile up, even though we're connected electronically now. It's never the same as being at home.
Right, yep, absolutely, 100%. So, well, thank you very much for joining us while you were on the road. We appreciate the dedication. Today's show, again, very interesting, like we said, and today's topic, we're talking about the breeding for traditional values such as disease resistance and long productivity. And in the email you had sent me a couple of days ago, you had talked about a breeder that you've met and have talked with that apparently has a 10-year-old hen that's still laying quite well as if it was when it was much younger.
Yes, and that was very interesting. One of the reasons being, as you mentioned, most people who raise chickens for eggs get rid of their hens when they're about 2 or 3 years old. That's not true. It's not only true of the industry, but it's also true of people who have smaller operations, because the feeling is that they're just not very productive after that. However, if you do that, you will never find out if any of those chickens actually would lay longer.
Right.
And so by keeping this hen for a long time, she's been able to observe how productive she really is. And this is now something that she's watching this hen's daughters and granddaughters to see whether they have that same ability to keep laying. This happens to be a white Chanticleer hen.
Oh, okay.
And, yeah, I was getting involved in that because I was writing a breed focus for an upcoming issue of Backyard Poultry, and I've had amazing help on that from a breeder in Canada who's kept Chanticleers for 29 years.
Wow.
And, yes, he's been involved with these birds through thick and thin at this point. And he also was able to share with me a lot of original documentation about the development of the breed and the development of the other varieties. There's a lot of controversy about those because one of the things that happened when Brother Wilfred, who was the monk who actually developed the Chanticleer, he developed just a white variety, and that was his idea, that he wanted a white bird. As soon as he introduced them, they became very popular. There was a lot of excitement about them, and so people started looking for different color varieties. Another separate breeder entirely had started working on a partridge Canadian bird, which he developed separately, called them Albertans. And he was showing those separately in the 1920s, and the early 1930s, and another breeder, a third one, liked the idea of buff chickens, and so he was developing a cold weather buff breed. He called those Canadian Cream. Now, when the APA got around to considering the Chanticleer for inclusion for recognition in the standard, what they did was, instead of recognizing the white Chanticleer and the Partridge Albertans separately, they combined them and called the Albertans a partridge variety of Chanticleers, even though they were developed entirely differently and were by different people. So the developer of the Albertans was not happy about that, although he continued to show his birds. And today, even today, those different varieties of Chanticleers are really quite different birds, even though they're all classified as Chanticleers. All the people that I've talked to who keep them find them very different. So that's one of the little historical background pieces that kind of makes a difference, kind of brings out. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, it is amazing. You know this, people in the chat room know this. When I see reports on the news wire, or we're going into community and helping folks fight to get the ordinances changed, it's amazing how people in the comments are just focus so much on the eggs. Well, what are you going to do with the chickens when they stop laying in 2 years? You know, we're going to have chickens, you're just going to let them loose because they're not laying. They're not, you know, and so we have to very quickly go in and tell folks that, look, it's not just about eggs. What if, you know, you have a dog, what if it has hip replacement or arthritis? You're not just going to get rid of your dog because now it has arthritis or has hip issues and it needs surgery or a hip replacement because it can't play ball anymore. You still keep it because it's a family pet. And same with a lot of the chicken owners out there who want backyard chickens. Plus, there's insect control, there's education, there's composting, there's fertilizer. There's a whole array of things that come with having those backyard chickens, not just eggs. Yes, that's the big reward, but there's so many other things. I know people, vegans and vegetarians that keep chickens that don't even use the eggs, don't eat chicken, and they give the eggs away, but they use their chickens for pets, composting, fertilizer, you know, insect control, and just that. So, like you said, with sometimes so focused on that egg, we've got to let them know. Now, there's so many, even after it may slow down, and that's another thing you've seen a million times, and I have too, in the articles where it says, well, since chickens stop laying in 2 years, and it just like it's fact, and it just at 2 years they have a birthday, and it's like, okay, I'm not laying anymore. It's amazing how that gets portrayed out in the public. But, you know, it's like, no, that's not the case. You know, many people have chickens that are still 5, 6 years old. They may have slowed down a little bit. Now they're getting an egg every other day. And so I was thrilled to hear about this one that we'll talk about in a minute that's got the still laying very good after 10 years. So to add to what you were just saying, I wanted to, you know, share that. Maybe we have some new listeners that are so focused on eggs, and it's not just about eggs. It's just all these other great benefits of having the backyard poultry.
Well, you make a lot of good points, Andy, and I was interested. I hadn't seen that story about the spent hens being used in school lunch programs.
I'll try to see if I can search that up and send it to you. But
yeah,
it was, we posted it, and it was amazing. That was like, you know, these spent hens that, and it made a point of even McDonald's and Wendy's not even wanting these chickens, but they were going into the school lunch program. I was like, great.
Yeah, you know, a lot of times they just gas those chickens and then compost them because they just because they are so used up. And this is, you know, an industry that makes decisions based on the bottom line. And in the film Mad City Chickens, if you get a chance to see that, they follow the story of one woman who she went out with her husband to the dump to dump off some stuff, and she saw a chicken running around out there. And it turned out it was one of these spent hens that that was considered to have no further value. And somehow it had survived being gassed. It had survived being dropped off a truck at the dump and was running around. So she caught it, brought it to a vet. She said she wasn't sure at the beginning whether this was humane or not. She thought, you know, it hardly had any feathers, looked really terrible. And she thought, well, if the kindest thing is to just put this bird down, then we'll do that. But the vet looked at her and said, you know, she's healthy enough. You know, she just looks bad, and she needs some good food and care. And sure enough, she fed her along and took care of her, and she turned into a wonderful pet who did continue to lay eggs. You know, she was still laying eggs, although, as you say, not at a level that was considered economically viable for this business. And I think that those are some of the questions we have to ask, of what does it mean to be economically viable? We now have chicken and eggs that are really cheaper than they've ever been, but at what other price are we paying for that in terms of antibiotic-resistant germs that we're cultivating in these operations and humane issues? So I think we need to keep looking at the bigger picture. Go ahead.
No, I was just, I'm trying to do a search here to try to find that article. I saw some other folks talking about it. Somebody was saying, so it was a couple of years ago when we posted it, but they just saw a story on National News expressing outrage at public schools are feeding kids spent hens obtained through the USDA. They're old throwaway hens because they're old and nobody wants them anymore, even fast food. So I'm going to keep looking while you can continue to talk about it.
Okay, yeah, that's fine. So this is a problem of humane treatment that a lot of people worry about. And I think that as we, you know, you're talking about those ordinances, which I was really glad to hear about, Somerville, Massachusetts, and, the changes that they're making. But we went through a period when really hardly anyone knew about chickens for the last, half of the 20th century, and they're undergoing a renaissance now. But we have to relearn all those things, all that knowledge that we lost. And as people are now keeping a few hens in the backyard, you know, there's still the problem of surplus roosters. And I think that that's sort of the next stage as we go into this, that we'll start realizing that those surplus roosters are really birds that will make good table birds, and that we don't have to deal with things like killing all the rooster chicks and worrying so much about sex selection, and recognizing that those birds have real value, and that can be part of a truly sustainable economic poultry operation. So we're not quite there yet, but I have see that on the horizon as something that we'd get into, as well as keeping these hens longer. Disease resistance is another natural trait in traditional breeds, but, you know, you don't really know about that until you've kept your birds for a few years and you've watched them go through cycles of disease. You know, everyone, you know, it's just like people get the flu. It's not the end of the world. Chickens do have a variety of maladies to which they are subject. And, you know, ideally, they're able to catch things and develop resistance and move on from it. That would be the goal. But without keeping those birds around, you can't really know that. So you just move along and think, well, you know, who knows what these birds really have. You need to keep those birds for a long time in order to tell what you've really got and what kind of traits you have. It's also for a lot of traditional breeds, you can't really tell what the plumage is until at least a year. I know that that's an issue for Javas, especially mottled Javas, and the mottled color pattern year after year tends to have more white in it. That doesn't mean that the bird is not a good bird for exhibition, but it's something that you really should know about your birds, how much white and how much black is going to be in their feathering. And you won't know that until you keep them through a few cycles of molting and see what kind of plumage comes in the next time.
Correct. I found several studies and articles about this. USDA put spent hens in school lunches. This was all about 2 years ago, December 09, most of the article. A lot of people picked it up, but here's one that correlates it. Just how bad does product have to be if McDonald's, KFC, and other fast food chains refuse to eat it? Pretty bad. After all, they have no reservations about using high fructose corn syrup, hydrogenated oils, carcinogenic binders, and a ton of genetically modified corn. The chicken McNugget is more GM corn than chicken, but even the Colonel and the Clown draw the line at using spent hens. The USDA, however, claims that spent hens are safe enough to feed to your children. To prove it, they have spent about $145 million of your tax dollars so they could put 77 million pounds of spent hens into your child's school lunch. That's right. The USDA, whose strategic plan framework states their goal of enhancing food safety by taking steps to reduce the prevalence of foodborne hazards from farm to table, is feeding your kids food that even McDonald's will not. So, and then you can go on and read the others. So if you just kind of, you can go to Yahoo or Google and just kind of put that spent hens and school lunches, and you'll find several articles that, websites that pick that up, Christine.
Okay, well, that's interesting. You know, I actually kind of wonder about that because I'm not that crazy about the chicken McNuggets that McDonald's does feed, you know. And they're choosing meat that for its tenderness, for its lack of any kind of muscling, really, and for its high fat content. So I'm actually wondering if those spent hens, but I just have a problem with the whole idea of spent hens and with raising egg-producing hens under the conditions, the crowded conditions that they live in. And I think we can do better, and I think we will. I think we're on the road to making those changes and changing consciousness. You know, another thing about keeping...
Let me read you something, since I hate to interrupt you again, but let me read you this, because this happened today. You just mentioned about how, you know, you're not very in favor, of course, of these small cages, these laying hens, the conditions are in, and the whole nine yards. Just this morning, it was posted on United Egg Producers Certified Facebook page. So this is United Egg Producers Certified, and this was posted just this morning, actually about an hour ago. And this is actually relative to what you're saying here. And here's a quote that they posted on their Facebook page. The advantage of having an egg produced in a cage system is that the egg gets away from the manure, the bedding, and the live animal. It rolls out of the cage after being laid more rapidly. Dr. Craig Reed, former deputy administrator of the Food Safety Inspection Service at the U.S. Department of Agriculture. So that was a quote that United Egg Producers, this man, that they posted on their site. Again, I'll read it again. The advantage of having an egg produced in a cage system is that the egg gets away from the manure, the bedding, and the live animal more rapidly. So they're bragging about that, apparently, saying this is why, or trying to justify the use of these cages.
Well, yeah, you know, they're going to make their case for what they're doing as exactly. The best possible and highest scientific standards and untouched by human hands and mm-hmm. untouched by your hand and all those things. And you know, I've had those discussions with people. You know, they say, oh, it's cruel to keep chickens in the backyard. They're subject to predation. They're right. subject to getting sick from wild birds. Oh, they have this terrible life. And portraying this the battery cage as, I mean, this is like an oil producer that presents fracking as a good idea. You know, it's cheap natural gas. You know, of course, as long as you don't look at, you know, the environmental cost of all the water that it takes to poison forever and the earthquakes that are caused, you know, as long as you don't look at that, you're fine. I mean, that these are people that are paid to do this, and, you know, I'm convinced that some of them do actually believe this because they've never seen a backyard operation.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say that all backyard operations are perfect. I've certainly seen situations in which hens are mistreated in backyards.
Right, yep.
You know, that there's no perfect solution, but I think that, you know, we're talking about some different things, and the fact that hens can be mistreated in a backyard, it doesn't condemn all of them. However, I think that the crowding in battery cages does, in fact, condemn all of them. I don't think any of those hens ever have a good day.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm sorry to see that, you know, we've come to a point where we just have so missed other values and have focused so entirely on the bottom line that this kind of practice can't even become acceptable, much less a practice that's defended as preferable to, you know, letting the hen out to scratch in the yard.
Mm-hmm.
But we were talking about traditional breeds and that these varieties of Chanticleer do have different temperaments. And that's one of the things that's happened as a result of their very different histories. They're really very different birds. And the Chanticleer, the white original Chanticleer, the people that I've talked to are finding that those are, they're very good foragers. They're extremely good at hiding from predators. That point's been raised, well, you know, how can that be for a white bird? But because they are bred for cold weather, they actually blend in well with a background that has snow on the ground. And the people mm-hmm. that I have talked to who are keeping them in New York State and Vermont, other cold climates, they've had very good results with their chickens mm-hmm. just out on pasture
yep.
despite that white coloring, because they do fit in with that climate. And that's an important thing to remember, that, you know, these birds are traditional breeds, are very specific to a geographical area and to the conditions there. And so that's one of the things that makes them special and have qualities that we don't want to lose. They do tend to be more flighty in the sense that they don't warm up to mm-hmm. Humans as well as the others. Now, Pat's buff Chanticleer is very friendly. She's from that Canadian cream line that was developed differently and is much more friendly to people. And so she's good at the nursing homes Pat takes her to. She's
right.
good with the public. But that's probably not going to be true of a white Chanticleer. They're just different critters. And it's important to know that going in. The one breeder suggested that Chanticleers have sort of a need for greater personal space around them. And so when a human approaches them, they're just very wary, mm-hmm. and they're just not going to enjoy that closeness the way a buff Chanticleer will.
Nancy in the chat room is asking, how is the Chanticleer in the southern states? And so I know it's designed Canada, developing Canada, cold climates, smaller comb for, you know, to prevent frostbite and issues like that. But, you know, Pat's in Virginia, and I know I think others in the southeast that also have Chanticleers that they're doing just fine.
They are doing just fine. They're very hardy birds, and they do just fine. However, if you're breeding Chanticleers and you're keeping them in a warm climate, inevitably those birds that you're going to end up selecting and breeding are going to be birds that do better in warm temperatures, and they're going to end up eventually not being like the ones from cold climates, just because that's what you're breeding for. You know, you're breeding under different conditions, and your flock's going to reflect those different conditions.
Okay.
But they're, you know, the people who have them just love them, and they are really good. They're good producers. This little hen that is producing so well after 10 years, another thing her owner noticed about her, she decided to try a couple of years ago cutting back on the commercial feed that she was getting on the protein end of things, just to see how that influenced egg production. And sure enough, egg production did go down, but not for a couple of the hens, including this one. They just kept on laying just as well as ever. And she looked down at the flock and she was saying, what is different? What is going on with these? And she noticed that the ones that kept laying well were the best insect catchers. They were always flapping up to catch another fly. They were scratching around more and chasing insects. And apparently they were able to supply for themselves more protein and keep their egg-laying production up.
I wonder how much of that would be all the extra, again, preservatives and all the other maybe chemicals that are in maybe the commercial feed. You know, like us with eating processed food versus the whole food. So I'm wondering how much of that may have had to take place.
That's a really good question, because all commercially prepared feeds are going to have some kind of fungicide in them, because otherwise they will deteriorate. I think that that's an open question that really deserves to be looked at.
I agree. And so that could be it, and it more getting their natural, say, diet from history, you know, back when they were domesticated 6,000 years ago. What is a chicken's? And someone had mentioned on the Facebook page today, I posted a video, Christine, someone had posted on YouTube just very recently, today or yesterday, and underneath the video, it was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this. My chicken ate a mole, and she ate it whole. And then someone had alerted me to this and said, Andy, is this normal? and I was like, yes, it's quite normal. They'll eat small mice, small rats, even small snakes and frogs and all these other things. And so I had posted it on my Facebook page with the video and comments, and they eat tons of insects too. And then I had talked about the someone had posted, which makes sense. She found it funny that these commercial chicken producers brag about their chickens being vegetarians. I think we all know one particular company that does that. And, you know, oh, these are vegetarian, you know, but when you look at what a chicken's natural diet is, they are anything but vegetarians.
Yeah, I find that advertising campaign kind of curious, too. I'm not really sure what to make of it. I'm not sure what the market is for that, or who wants their chickens to be vegetarians, or why they think that's desirable. Of course, from that company, who knows what they're feeding them if they're not feeding them vegetarian stuff. So, you know, that's – but, you know, they're probably just feeding them GM corn, and that's what you're getting out. So, you know, I don't know – I think that that reflects also the knowledge in the general population that of chickens, that people don't realize what chickens eat. And we had a rat problem with our coop a while back. We've got a special feeder that the chickens have to open. They have to step on it to open it and get their feed. And we had tried to keep that, but, you know, you live in the country. And we had noticed that my husband was working out there, and he saw a rat. So we got some traps, and we put those out there. And, of course, the rats figured that out right away. And so my husband got discouraged. And sure enough, we ended up finding two rats that the chickens killed. and we eventually trapped one with a rat trap. But the chickens actually killed more than we did. So they and they were kind of big rats, so it was kind of shocking. But you know, they certainly are, they can be very good defenders of their flock and their and of their feed. And I bet that rat just came down there and tried to get into their feed, and they said, "Hold on, buddy, it's time's up." And that was the end of him. So I certainly, one of the things in Mad City Chickens, too, they actually show a flock of chickens chasing a snake and getting a snake away. And the owner of that particular flock talked about how this had happened. He when he came close to a rattlesnake one day. He heard the rattle and looked up, and there was the rattlesnake, and he's frozen in place, not wanting this to strike him. And the chickens came over and ushered the rattlesnake out of the area. So, you know, they can do amazing things. So, they're, you know, they have to, although they are prey birds, and they're certainly subject, we all know about what that's like, you know, that they're always, you know, rats and raccoons are always looking for a spare chicken. But they also have developed a lot of ability to defend themselves. And this is, you know, again, this is when it's nice to be able to have a rooster in your flock, because he can do a lot in terms of flock leadership and announcing when there's some danger to the flock and of defending the flock. And chickens can do a lot for themselves too. So, you know, it's easy to look at them as, you know, and this is what happens when they breed for a very docile temperament, like you mentioned, you know, that's important to keep chickens. If you're going to keep them in such crowded conditions, it's important for them not to have a very aggressive temperament. They need to be bred to be very docile, very tame, not really care what's going on around them. But then, of course, those chickens don't make very good pasture chickens, because they lack the alertness and the vigilance to protect themselves and the rest of the flock.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Interesting. Now, we talked about the you know, the egg laying. What you were going to touch a little bit on, you know, breeding the chickens based on illness and disease preventative.
Well, you know, certainly you have an opportunity when you keep your flock for several years to see what happens. You know, chickens will be subject to parasites, internal worms, external mites and lice, as well as various forms of avian influenza, most of which is not, you know, it's like influenza for people. Most of the time, it's just something you get over it, and just like for people, different varieties circulate through. But you have an opportunity to see which chickens do get sick, which chickens get really sick and die, which chickens don't, which chickens bounce back, which chickens lay through the winter. You know, if you don't keep your chickens through a few winters, there's really no way for you to know.
Yeah, and it sounds, and again, I guess my point, you don't have to be some fancy geneticist to be able to, if you are doing a homestead breeding program or you're watching your flock, and you want to, you know, select possibly the perfect chickens that you've gotten tons of eggs from, that are hardly ever sick, that are the good size, that are meeting the standard, and it's just a matter of,
again, as the other ones get ill or get sick, or, you know, taking those eggs, you know, separate, you know, so you don't have to have a degree or be a geneticist to figure out how to, like you're just saying, you know, observe your flock, see which ones are sick over the years, see which ones are, how their diets are, how they're laying, the size of their eggs, the quantity of their eggs, and then you know, singling those out as your best ones, and then breeding those.
Exactly, and then watching how their progeny do and see if that's a trait that's even passed on.
Right, because we know
so,
it. Because it might not have been.
Exactly, it could be just something unusual about this hen. This hen also has some physical attributes that are different. She has a kind of mohawk scruff on the back of her neck that is unusual. And she also grew spurs at a relatively young age. Not a lot of hens grow spurs, but some do.
Mm-hmm.
And she found that interesting, that this is, you know, and these things could be a complex of genetic traits that all go together, or they could be separate and have nothing to do with each other. You know, those are questions that the intelligent and careful breeder might be interested in looking at and perhaps finding some insight into. There's some interesting breeding going on with Javas right now. Now, I think we talked about the Auburn Java some time ago. And the Lyle Beale, who is breeding those, had noticed that he was starting to get some silver spangled birds in his flock, and he was interested to see what that was about. The Java breeders online listserv has been talking about some other birds that other people have been getting that are kind of silver or gray colored, and they're taking a look at that. Now, the question that's being raised about that is, are these traits that were in Javas and got lost when so few people were breeding them and are now being rediscovered, or are they traits that somehow along the way got bred into these birds from breeding with other birds that are now starting to surface as people breed them more frequently? And those are real interesting questions that that these breeders, as they're doing their work, will be able to shed some light on, if not provide a real answer. You know, these genetic questions can be very difficult to unsnarl because traits are so often governed by more than one gene, and there's a lot going on. There's a lot of genes that moderate other genes, so you can't always tell what you've got. So anyway, it's endless hours of fascination, and I just am so grateful to these wonderful breeders who are doing such a good job in providing information on questions that in a lot of ways we didn't even know were questions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And how much of this, I mean, you think... it does take time. It takes some effort. It may take some documentation. And I would guess in this day and age that people probably have the attitude that, you know what, that takes time and effort and documentation and some free thinking, where I could just, you know, click of a mouse, order a few more chickens, and then, you know, have good laying for the next 2 or 3 years. You know, chickens are relatively inexpensive. I can get them here delivered, you know, on a whim. And so instead of actually trying to work hard to maybe develop this and do this. Now, some people are very interested in that. I think a lot of times today, it's just in this easy society and lazy society, it's just as easy for them to say, well, God, I don't have time for that, when I can just click a mouse and get 25 more biddies tomorrow for, you know, 50 cents a piece or a dollar a piece on sale.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, I wouldn't necessarily characterize them as lazy. I think it's mostly an educational process, and that's why when people say, oh, you know, I got a flock of these red stars or, you know, whatever, some kind of egg-laying hybrid, you know, that's what they are. They're nice chickens. There's nothing wrong with them. They do lay well. They're attractive. But that you have to go back to the hatchery for more of them because they can't, you know, you're not going to ever get, you're not going to be able to raise those. They're a hybrid, and the next generation is just going to be mongrels in a mixed bag. So you're not... you know, pursuing a recognized breed.
Right.
And the thing is, when people get those, I totally understand it, and that's the stage that they're at. They're taking that step. They're enthusiastic, and they're going to learn about it. And I think that they'll probably see things differently after spending a couple of years with a flock like that and getting their interest piqued. And I think that, I loved your idea about the TV show and going around and setting up community gardens and community chicken coops, because I think that can be a very important step for people to start to get a toe in the water and to start learning about chickens and to see what's going on out there. Because, like we're saying, you know, I mean, there's questions that I don't know exist yet, and they're just at a different place learning what the questions are.
Right.
The most common question I get from people is, do you have to have a rooster to get eggs?
Right, exactly.
You know? So that's the level people are on, and whenever I get that question, I love it because I know that that person's going to learn something that day that they didn't even know was a question.
That's a great point. And you know what's really sad, related, kind of not related, you mentioned it about this, and these producers I've talked to, and I can't, I got an email again, or actually I got an instant message from Facebook from another one last week, and I wouldn't say I went off on him, but I did a little vent with him, and he understood where I was coming from, but I told him, I said, you know, I don't blame you because I know this is your job to find crazy stuff to put on TV that these Americans want to watch because a lot of them are just, I mean, brain dead. So you know, it's like I don't blame the Discovery Channel. I don't blame this producer because they're just basically creating and finding things that will get people to sit in front of their television and just sit there and stare at it and lose brain cells. But I had a producer tell me, I guess it was about a month ago when we were talking about this show, and she and I told her, you know, I said, look, no, I'm not going to do something stupid. I'm not going to do something crazy. I've got a reputation. I've got a family. I have to live on this earth. Forget about it, you know. They ended up wanting, one of them wanted a show. Many of you may be familiar with, what's the television show? What's that one, Jen? Oh, Duck Dynasty. So Discovery was looking for somebody that where they could create a show that's like Duck Dynasty, but it would be their network show like that. Well, you know, no, I'm not your guy. But she said, and this is what really kind of hit it home for me, knowing when I say that, you know, we're just, you know, brain dead Americans, is that she said, unfortunately, and I'll quote this, unfortunately, TV shows that are too earnest don't do very well. So something that's good family oriented, that's helping people, that has a, you know, just a real good feel good theme, like the backyard gardens, the in troubled areas, the, you know, whatever it may be. And that was exactly her quote. Says, unfortunately, shows that seem to be too earnest don't do so well. But yet you've got shows like Honey Boo Boo, which are sucking the brain cells out of everybody that watches it, having 2 million viewers an episode. It's whether it be entertainment or just because they want to watch to see how stupid the show is, but something benefiting the community, educational, feel-good, family-oriented, sometimes just too earnest doesn't do well. So it's the frustration factor there, and I don't blame him. We were messaging back and forth. He said, can I have my producer call you and talk about, you know, I had helped him try to find some chicken owners for a particular show. And he was coming back to me saying, hey, I'm interested in what you're doing. And I told him, I said, I'm trying to think what I told him regarding that. I said, I'm tired of wasting my time, tired of emailing back, you know, taking time to email. And so we went down that and down that road. But so it would be great if something like that would end up occurring. But I'm not, again, fingers crossed, yes, getting hopes up, no, because, again, it's too earnest for TV. It's not, I don't know, maybe the IQ of our viewer would have to be higher than some of the stuff that's out there. I just get really frustrating. And when she told me that, that was the end-all when she said shows, you know, unfortunately, shows that are too earnest don't do very well on TV. So that shows you the people who are watching TV these days, but kind of
well, cool. Certainly, that's her estimation of us too. You know, I would like to think that there is a market for a higher quality of entertainment. You know,
right.
If you haven't seen Mad City Chickens, take a look at that because they do a good job with that. but it is upbeat. It's interesting.
Right.
I think people like to see other people's stories. Of course, you know, I mean, I couldn't agree with you more on what's mostly on TV. I mean, we have cable now and 100 channels, and mostly there's nothing on I want to watch. And I do wonder, you know, who's watching this stuff?
Thank you.
You know, what is going on out there? But on the other hand, the fact that something has sold doesn't mean that something else won't sell. It's just
true.
That it's not there. So,
exactly. That's a very good point.
You know, I think it's possible, and you're a real charming guy, Andy, you know, be funny.
I can get on my soapbox every now and then, like everybody, and go to town, like I said, with this last one that contacted me and said, would you like to talk with my producer? And I just kind of went, oh, not again. Between the one that wanted me to, between the one that wanted somebody that communicated with chickens, to the one that wanted to have a show about chickens that was had Jerry Springer drama to it, to this one wanting a dynasty type of show, and then another one, it's just, it's amazing. Maybe one day, you know, and I tell folks the best I can with the limited TV that I watch when I'm on the road, because we don't own one, is that I try to explain it, you know, something between Martha Stewart and This Old House, you know, on maybe HGTV, Home and Garden Television, where it's educational, you're traveling, you visit coops and backyards, and you troubleshoot some, or, you know, maybe you do a extreme coop makeover for somebody that needs a new one, or, you know, again, set up a community garden, and, you know, different things like that. But I guess if it doesn't have any drama associated with it. Now, we talked about even going to the poultry shows. You know, there's some drama there. There's some competition. There's people that get under each other's skin and, you know, they'll get mad at the judges, or, you know, they're, you know, follow the show scene for a season and follow a couple of folks that go from show to show, and a little animosity there, and a little treatment, a little back talk, a little, oh, well, she's doing this to her chicken, so, you know, or I don't like this judge, he plays favorites, you know, all this stuff. You know, that's, there's some drama, or it could be some drama there, but it ended up being, I guess, out of all the ones we talked about, this one. And then, of course, they said, well, you know, of course, Discovery and Animal Planet wouldn't be interested. But maybe Oprah's network, I guess she's got one own, would be interested. So who knows? Yeah, if it happens, it happens. I've pretty much, if they send me an email, I'll respond. But that's about it, not pursuing it in any way. So it's one of those.
Well, Andy, I think you've got a ton of great ideas there. And I think that they would make shows that a lot of people would watch. My experience up in Madison, Wisconsin, with the community mm-hmm. garden, had loads of natural drama in it. I mean, they had, well, really, because
yeah.
there's so much ethnic diversity, there's so much hardship that people are enduring, they had reorganized the garden into plots so that they had a very large Hmong population from their highland farmers from Southeast Asia, and they don't integrate much into the community. It's an interesting ethnic group, and they have a lot of they fought very much with the Americans during the Vietnam War, and they then had to flee the country, and they ended up here, and they live in clans. They have a different kind of social organization, so the community garden organizers remapped the garden so that clans could garden together, and they're excellent farmers. I mean, there's just, and that's just in one community garden. It's just so much the diversity and interest that I think people would be fascinated by, and I think you're on the right track. There is one guy who's been doing a show, and I have not had a chance to see it, but his name is P. Allen Smith. And he's known as a master gardener,
mm-hmm.
but I know he has included his chickens in some shows. You might look into contacting him and see if you could work with
him. He has?
Yeah.
I'm familiar.
Mm-hmm. He has a garden show, and he has a website. So certainly check those out, and that might, you know, he might have some experiences. He might have, he might be interested in partnering with you or having you as a guest and maybe getting something started. What you're saying about these producers just strikes me as yet again another education problem. Mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. They come to you, they don't know anything, but they have a couple of wacky ideas, and this is a process. And I think that every time you interact with them, you're kind of helping nudge them down the road to a little bit more enlightenment about what they're really talking about. And I think only good things can come of it, really. I think it's a great idea. I think there'd be a lot of fun. One of the shows that I think of that had a lot of potential and it didn't quite get there, but I thought it was well-intentioned, was a show called Undercover Boss.
Oh,
and what
yeah.
they do, the premise of this was that they would have the president or the CEO of the company go undercover and work at some of the more menial jobs in the company that he owned and see what was going on. And, you know, usually there's some problem. They're trying to understand what's going wrong at a particular location. And then they would always have, you know, some real heartwarming stories. He'd get to know some of the people who work for the company and their problems and their struggles. And then at the end, you know, they'd get, you know, a scholarship or he'd mm-hmm. take them under his wing to, you know, if it was someone who was running a franchise really well, he'd, you know, help them out with that. Anyway, I like the idea of it because I think it really did address some of the issues of corporate leadership, which is not serving their companies or the country well, to understand, to open that door a little bit and to kind of reconnect with what's going on out there. And it certainly was instructive for the people who experienced that to get to know the corporate executives and to see things, to have an opportunity to have their voices heard.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I think there's ideas out there. I think TV is a great medium. I think it's having some very dark days right now, and there's not a lot encouraging out there. But I just feel like, wow, you know, it's like the Internet. It's a great tool. There's a lot of power there, and it can be used for a lot of good things. And I you're the pioneer, Andy. Go out there and make it happen.
We'll see what happens, absolutely. Christine, thank you so much for joining us today. It's a great topic. We learned a lot and hopefully opened a lot of minds and eyes to paying attention to our backyard chickens. We don't have to be, you know, geneticists to figure this out or to see and learn and how important it can be to watch our chickens and see what's different with one than the other as far as productivity and illness and the length of laying and the size of the eggs and the whole nine yards. So that's perfect. And, of course, we want to let everybody know that they can become fans of yours at the poultrybookstore.com, www.poultrybookstore.com. And you've got your books that are there. You've got a blog that you do. I will say probably one of the best blogs that are out there, because there's so many out there that are full of quackery and hearsay and just, you know, and guesswork and just really not accurate at all. You have a fabulous blog, and of course on your website you've also got some lists of the different poultry shows around the country, and so that's poultrybookstore.com. And both of Christine's books, maybe more than, well, we got How to Raise Poultry and How to Raise Chickens, both endorsed by the FFA, that you can find on Amazon, of course. And I think that your website too, is that correct, Christine?
That's correct, yep. And right. There will be a new edition of How to Raise Chickens next spring.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
That'll be super. So just with some new and improved information?
Yes. Things changed a lot in the 5 years since the book first came out. So yeah, I was very excited to have an opportunity to update that.
Wonderful. Well, thank you very much for joining us. We look forward to seeing you next month on the fourth Tuesday. You have great travels. I know you travel a lot, and I know you're on the road now, so be very safe, and we'll see you next month.
Okay. Thanks a million, Andy. You too.
Thank you.
When you need an incubator, think Brentsey, the incubation specialist.
Brensie has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensie.com. Brensie spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensie.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg handlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensie. Technology you can trust.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com, that's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
EggCartons.com, your discount supplier of egg cartons and poultry supplies. They carry a wide variety of egg cartons in paper, plastic, and foam, as well as a great selection of poultry supplies, including incubators, brooders, waterers, feeders, and more. Order online at eggcartons.com or call toll-free 1-888-852-5340. Free full-color catalog available. Be sure to sign up for their online newsletter for more great specials. That's eggcartons.com.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waterers, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at gqfradio.com. That's gqfradio.com.
It's easy and rewarding to keep backyard chickens, and My Pet Chicken can supply everything you need to get started, including baby chicks, chicken coops, accessories, books, and free how-to information, plus fun gifts and rooster decor. At My Pet Chicken, you can buy as few as 3 baby chicks. They also sell fertile hatching eggs. Visit them online at mypetchicken.com. That's mypetchicken.com.
Today's special guest segment is brought to you by NatureWise Natural Poultry Feeds by Nutrina. NatureWise Natural Poultry Feeds by Nutrina are the natural choice for nutritionally balanced feed for your flock and contain only fresh, wholesome ingredients. Learn more at NutrinaNatureWise.com. That's NutrinaNatureWise.com.
Actually, in reality, I am Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken at Whisper. That was Christine Heinrich, author of How to Raise Chickens, How to Raise Poultry, and historian with the Society for Preservation of Poultry Antiquities. We thank you very much for staying with us today. Lots of action going on in the chat room talking about the different TV shows that are out there and TV show suggestions. Chicken Information Ambush, CIA, and just basically track down uninformed people and ambush them with a camera and a microphone. And it's kind of like that, thinking about that, Many of you have heard this story probably about a dozen times, but back when we were having the gas issues, and we're still having high prices, but there was gas was going up in price. Some gas stations were running out of gas. There was the long lines, and panic ensued, and food prices started going up. I was in a Publix in the Johns Creek area, and I was sitting there in the frozen vegetable aisle where the frozen vegetables are. And there was a young lady, and I will just tell you what I describe. I'm not stereotyping here. She was a young lady with a fancy, probably $1,000 pocketbook, in her tennis outfit, probably $100 tennis shoes, probably $400 or $500 eyeglasses, sunglasses, fancy nails. Okay, I'm just describing exactly what who it was. And we're looking in the frozen food section here in the vegetables, and I said, well, it looks like that high diesel prices have finally caught up to our food. Or, you know, something like that. Well, it looks like the high diesel prices have finally caught up with the green beans or something. And she looked at me and she said, why would high diesel prices cause our green beans to go up? Of something like that. Or why would high fuel prices cause our food to go high? And I was so, I wish I had a camera, the look on my face. I can't imagine what it looked like. But I took the opportunity not to make fun or laugh, but I had to explain to her. I said, well, ma'am, the farm machinery that it takes to plant these vegetables, diesel, the fertilizer they use in most cases is petroleum-based. And then all this diesel to harvest all these vegetables, drive them to the processor, and then, of course, all the fuel that has to go on with processing, making these boxes free, and then it has to get here in trucks that run on diesel. I had to go through the whole issue, and so I did use it as a teachable moment. And it's almost like a little light bulb went off, and she was kind of like, I never really thought about that. Probably because she's thinking about how to impress her friends at the dinner party tonight. But it's very very interesting, and so that's, you know, exactly as we're going down the someone also had mentioned picklefish. So, I mean, they're going down this whole thing in the chat room about what outfit you could wear on a television show. But he said some fancy black overalls. Now, you say that, picklefish. Yeah, many of you don't know because you haven't seen the pictures. Whenever I attend a wedding, I guess, or a fancy dinner of some type, I do. I have a pair of black, the overalls from the wedding. See, BYP386, longtime listener and fan, exactly remembers. And I'll have to maybe dig up those pictures from the wedding I went to. It's black overalls, okay, with a white tuxedo shirt, black cufflinks, black bow tie, okay, the little black button covers down the tuxedo shirt with the ruffle on it, you know, and then, of course, the fancy tuck shirt collar, and the fancy cowboy boots. You laugh, but I do have that outfit, and I do to weddings or special little dinners or whatever instead of a tuxedo, and it actually it looks quite well. People are surprised when I tell them, oh, I'm going to wear some overalls, and they look at me kind of funny, but then when I show up, I mean, again, it's very tuxedo looking with the black overalls, the tuck shirt, the cufflinks, the button covers, the fancy, I don't even know what to kind of call the collar that is, and bow tie, black bow tie, and the fancy boots. So, and so you laugh, but, I've got that outfit. I'll have to post a picture again to remind folks about that haven't been following or been a fan for too long. So, very, very good there, but that was entertaining. So, no black overall shorts. Nope, no thanks. So, just a reminder, tomorrow, Wednesday, Small Business Day here on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. I will, after the show, get on the bandwagon here and find a guest to come on tomorrow's show to entertain us and educate us. And then Thursday, a great show, one of my favorites, Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine, coming up this Thursday, talking all about freezing produce for storage. Freezing produce for storage. And then this Friday, Fun Friday the 28th. Now, don't forget, very important, do not forget, less than a week now, next Monday, October the 1st, yep, next Monday, October the 1st, we're going to start our two chicken coop contests. We already know, and I've shared with you, that one is going to be the password collection for poultry protection. Okay, we'll post a password every day on our Facebook page. It'll be posted over on our Twitter account, and we'll announce it on the radio show. Passwords are only issued Monday through Friday. Okay. The last password will be issued on, we'll start on Monday, October 1st. The last one will be issued on Tuesday, October 30th. And then on the 31st, we'll take the correct caller, caller number or whatever, 43. And if you're caller number 43 and can recite live on the air all of the secret passwords, then you're going to win one of those awesome chicken coops. And I have yet to determine the other type of contest. I'm not really sure yet. Trying to be creative and where I can still, everybody can participate, Facebook, Twitter, live listeners, archive listeners, the whole nine yards. So we'll try to come up with a creative contest. We've got both coops. One coop has been donated graciously by Derek and Tracy over at mypetchicken.com. And you actually, from them, get to choose your coop based on a choice of three. You've got the salt box, the four square, and the bungalow. You can choose one of those if you win. And then the other coop's been given and donated by Snaplock Chicken Coops with an S, snaplockchickencoops.com. So we've got unprecedented. Not only do we give more chickens or coops away than anybody on the planet, but we give away two in 1 month. So we're very, very excited, totally unprecedented, and we're very excited. October is going to be a fantastic month, and we're going to have two happy, happy winners on Halloween, the 31st, when we give away those two those two on the 31st. So very, very good. So until tomorrow, we hope you have an absolutely wonderful day today with family and friends and working out on your homestead and or at your jobs. And we hope you can tune in tomorrow, 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Blog Talk Radio for another episode of Backyard Poultry with a Chicken Whisperer. Have a great day, everybody. Thank you very much for tuning in. Ah!